Meanwhile, in the JL May podcast crossover, The Brave and the Bold, number 23, cover dated July 2009. Hello, and welcome to the Justice League International Bwahaha Podcast, a proud member of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. This episode is another of our Meanwhile episodes. In these Meanwhile episodes, we break from the usual numbered issues to provide a chance to look at the JLI outside of the ongoing monthly series. This time out, we're doing something a little different and chatting about a Booster Gold appearance in the Brave and the Bold team-up comic. Now, my name is the Iridium Shag, and I'm your host, but I'm not doing this alone. Thankfully, I'll be joined by a buddy to help me cover the issue. Now, my co-host today, he's a returning guest, and he's been trying to stake his claim as the number one Power Girl fan ever since. He might just hold on to that title for a little while, at least until Symbol Pending appears on the show in the next few months. This guest is also an incredibly nice guy, and nature gifted him with a fantastic podcasting voice, which makes me hate him all that much more. Folks, please help me welcome back to the show, Mr. John Koos. Welcome to the embassy again, John. Thanks for being here. How you doing, man?
I have a great podcasting voice. Thank you very much, Jag.
You're supposed to save the helium for later.
Oh, yeah. No, man, I really appreciate it. It's really an honor. And I got to apologize up front to your listeners. I might be a little groggy. It's what, I don't know, 8:20 on a Thursday night. And yesterday morning, I was in New Orleans at a conference and I went to bed at 3:30, you know, because the French Quarter. But no, I'm ready to go, man. And I'm really happy to be here.
We've all got a French Quarter experience we'd rather not talk about. So I totally understand. It's 11 o'clock for me. So I can feel your pain. But we are going to get through this because we have a comic to talk about. Let's put it that way.
We do have a comic to talk,
yes, we do. To talk about.
Right on, man. Let's go.
Absolutely. So this time out, we're doing something kind of cool. You know, normally we're talking about comics from the 1980s or 1990s, but this time out, we are jumping all the way forward to 2009 because we are part of the JL May podcast crossover this year. And this is exciting. Over 25 different podcasts are participating, and we are all celebrating the Brave and the Bold comic series that ran from 2007 to 2010. And so what we decided, since this is JLI, we picked the Booster Gold issue of the Brave and the Bold, and that's what we're going to be talking about. Now, I got to ask you, John, as an introduction here, you know, the Brave and the Bold comic, you know, do you have a personal history with that series?
You know, it's funny, actually, I really don't have like some sort of committed history to it. I mean, I've always loved team up books. You know, of course, I read some during the Bronze Age, right? But nothing sticks to memory, you know? I mean, I think Brave and the Bold 200 sticks in my brain a little bit because of like the debut, or there was like a preview at the end of for the Outsiders,
yeah,
and stuff.
Yeah.
But aside from that, not really. But what I do love, I mean, I love the Brave and the Bold cartoon that started in 08, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
I mean, I literally think over the last, whatever it's been, you know, 14, 15 years, that I've probably watched it over time, like three times through, because it's just fun, you know? And the funny thing is, in the early times when it came out, I had little kids. And so it was like one of those cartoons that had all these puns. And for me, right, like DC lore and stuff that was like super entertaining for me personally, but also my kids could like it because it was like a cartoon and it had superheroes. And so, like, unlike the other stuff I was watching at the time with my little kids, like Dora the Explorer, you know how like little kids like
oh yeah,
like how they like, you have to watch it like 10 times, like the same one, you know,
it was
great. And then at the same time, they had a comic version of the Brave and the Bold animated series that was out, and I bought them. And to kind of kickstart my son in reading, you know, because, you know, it's something I enjoy, and what little boy doesn't like Batman or whatever. So that's more my history with the Brave and the Bold, if that counts.
No, absolutely, because that's a fantastic series. It's so much fun. It's obviously inspired by the whole whole team up concept by the original Brave and the whole Bold comics. So it's absolutely valid. And it's such a good book. Now, I will say real quick, just completely aside, same sort of situation, getting our kids to read. In my case, a little bit different timing with kids. So I didn't have Brave and the Bold, but I had my stepson reading the Marvel Adventures line of the Spider-Man comics. So it was absolutely trying to get comics in his hands they would read. And my daughter really took a liking to the Archie comics. So it's sort of that thing. We're trying to pass our disease down to our children, right? Of reading comics.
Absolutely. And, but, you know, I don't know if you remember this. There's a particular episode, which I just like, I've probably seen this one like five or six times. It's this one, I think it might be the first episode of like the last season where Superman gets exposed to like red kryptonite.
Okay.
And instead of him getting deformed or, you know, something else, he becomes just like this total jerk. Like, and there's this one section in it where Jimmy Olsen, he almost says like in the show, but like a kid wouldn't catch it. Uh-huh. Where like he says, "Wow, you're acting like a dick," and then Lois like cuts him off. The show is so clever. It also has just tons of lore for guys like us. On the JSA and the Metal Men, all the cool stuff, man. It's a great show.
Well, I was doing the Firestorm blog at the time, and so every time Firestorm showed up, that cartoon gave us a Firestorm Happy Meal toy. Like that's something I never thought would exist in my lifetime. So, I mean, that's crazy.
Well, there you go.
Well, for my history with Brave and the Bold, thanks for asking, by the way. I actually talked about it last week on the Once Upon a Geek podcast, but just sort of to recap real quick, I missed the original publication. Like, I didn't really buy it at all, but I did pick up back issues occasionally if it was a character that was partnering with Batman that I liked. Like, I bought the Firestorm issue, or I bought the Dr. Fate issue, things like that. And then, I loved team-up books, but I was a big fan of Marvel team-up. So, that's what I was reading, was Marvel team-up, maybe some DC Comics Presents. So, I didn't really glom on to Brave and the Bold until probably after we started the Fire and Water Podcast Network, because Rob and I would do so many episodes featuring a Brave and the Bold issue, and I absolutely fell in love with the Bob Haney scripts, the Jim Aparo art. So I have a huge love for this stuff now. And then, of course, I bought this series, the one from 2007 to 2010. So that's where I kind of fall on it. It wasn't my jam growing up, but I've learned to appreciate it as I've gotten older.
Well, yeah. And what comic book did Justice League of America debut in?
Brave and the Bold number 28, I believe.
What? Yeah, Brave and the Bold is awesome. And as I've gotten older too, as I dive through back issue bins and stuff, I got my little list and stuff, and I've been picking them up, and they're great. You know, one shots,
mm-hmm.
one shot team up. You know, they're cool.
Exactly, and it's a lost art. I mean, it really is, and that's what I loved about this run of Brave and the Bold, especially as they got later in the run with like this issue here is a one shot. The ones that Michael Straczynski did are one shots. So I'm always, always up for great one-shot comics.
Me too, man. I mean, I like series too, but you just said something really interesting.
I actually say a lot of interesting things. You should pay attention.
Well, I do. I try, but sometimes, yeah. But, you know, and that's what I learned from listening to you guys is like the nuances of like one-shots versus series and how you have to recognize that it's one thing to write a full story in, you know, one comic versus a full story in like five or six. And it's a different art form almost.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, our good friend, Zoom Yukinori, who's no longer with us, he did a podcast on our network all about this called Done in One Wonders. And it was all about celebrating comics that did the whole story in one issue. And it's a lot of fun if you ever go back and listen to his podcast. It's all still out there. And we miss Zoom. And it was a great way for him to celebrate that.
We'll also check those out.
Yeah. Now, before we get too much further, though, we do need to take a second to thank our sponsor. Folks, this episode of the JLI podcast is sponsored in part by InStockTrades.com. InStockTrades is your best online source for trades, hardcovers, and other collected editions, all for up to 42% off with free shipping on orders of $50 or more. Now, each episode, we select a collected edition to briefly discuss from the InStock Trades library. Usually, it's tied into this month's discussion in some way, shape, or form. This time out, I picked out Blue and Gold trade paperback. This is the collected edition of the Blue and Gold miniseries that Dan Jurgens did with Ryan Sook just, I think, last year. I don't know. I lose track of time. But very recent. It's issues 1 through 8 collected. We had Dan on the show, interviewed him about the series. It's a lot of fun. It's Booster and Beetle looking at their their shenanigans in a modern context. Like, what would they be like on social media and things like that? And it's about them trying to be the best heroes they can, right? And earn their place in the DCU. So it's super fun. It's very contemporary. It's 192 pages. It's full color and normally goes for $19.99, but you can get it for $11.59 right now. So it's 42% off. It's so much fun.
It's a great comic book. It's super fun. And yeah, I think it's like 18 months to 12 months old. It's super cool. And if you're a JLI fan like us,
yep.
I mean, it just has that feel. It just has that feel. And you're right. There's that whole social media aspect where there's these followers of those two while they're getting in battles and stuff. They're, oh, Booster going down and stuff. It's it's like live streaming stuff. It's super fun and modern. It's cool.
And he worked it into the plot. I'm not going to say any more than that, but it fits and it works well. And there's stuff in there where you get about halfway through, you're like, oh my gosh. And so it's a lot of fun. And again, it's a perfect pick because, you know, this issue is about Booster Gold. It's by Dan Jurgens. That's by Dan Jurgens. It's great. So got to ask you, John, what did you bring to discuss?
Nothing.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Thanks so much for coming.
No. Actually, I was going to pick Booster Gold 52 Pickup, which is that series that takes place like right kind of after the whole era with Infinite Crisis and the 52 weekly series. But I'm going to talk about that later. So I decided to go to type and pick a really recent trade paperback. It just came out like a month ago or so. I picked up a couple copies. It's Power Girl Power Trip trade paperback. It consists of JSA Classified 1-4 and then Power Girl 1-12, which also take place literally like right after Infinite Crisis, where like Power Girl's retconned re-history. She's now officially back to being an Earth 2 Kryptonian and all that stuff. And she's kind of got this sort of identity crisis, to use a term, right? about like where she fits in, because Supergirl exists and that's Superman's actual cousin and all. It's a great comic book, and it's written by a team of, you know, Justin Gray, Jimmy Palmiotti, Jeff Johns, and of course the amazing art by Amanda Connor. And like, that was really the first time I was exposed to Amanda Connor, and I love that art. And for the buyer, it's actually retail at $39.99, but you can get it for 42% off for $23.19.
That's a heck of a deal, man, for a great series. First of all, the JSA Classified 1-4 by itself is a lot of fun. It's a great mini because it's throwing, I mean, we all know how it ends now, but at the time it was throwing you curveballs left and right about, you know, what is Power Girl's origin? Where is she from? It was super fun to go through. And then the ongoing series is so much fun. So yeah, this is an absolute win.
Yeah, if you're a JSA fan, like, and you're an Earth 1, Earth 2 pre-crisis fan, I'm not going to be a spoiler, but there's this section where she's trying to find herself and she co-visits Helena Bertinelli at the Huntress to sort of like say, I know you're not Helena Wayne, but I just need to talk to somebody. And Helena Bertinelli's like, I'm not really like a girl talk person. It's a super cool book, but hey, you know what? I know I keep preceding. I think you got Simple Pinning coming up in a few months, but yeah, sorry, Simple Pinning. You were probably going to pick this trade. Sorry, bro.
Oh, you
once
two
again.
It's going to come to blows between you two sooner or later.
Yeah, man. Well, we'll see.
Well, thank you so much. That was a great pick. And folks, for these and all your other trade paperback needs, please visit instocktrades.com. Now, this episode is also sponsored in part with your Patreon support, because running the Fire and Water Podcast Network with so many shows requires a lot of online hosting and other services. And a while back, we realized we needed some help with the expenses. So we launched the Patreon, and you folks really stepped up to help keep the network going. So if you're enjoying the JLI Podcast, the best way to support our show is by visiting our Patreon, which is patreon.com/FW Podcast. And while you're there, please consider supporting the Fire and Water Podcast Network. And at certain tiers, you'll get mentioned on your show of choice, just like these folks who asked to be recognized on the JLI Podcast. So our thanks go out to Bill Beer, Chris Lewis, Chris Pine, David Ace Gutierrez, DC Dave, Devin Clancy, Doug Adamson, George Van Note, Gord Tolton, Kevin Wetter, Mark Baker Wright, Martin Gray, Matt Ev, Maxwell Traver, Michael Crouch, Michael Zomkowski, Roger Preeb, Rudy Castillo, Sean Ross, Superman Radio Revisited Podcast, Symbol Pending, and Tim Price.
What? You forgot someone.
I did?
What? Yeah, man. Like, I should have been somewhere between Gord Tolton and Kevin Wetter, man. It's me. This is my podcast. I'm a Patreon guy.
Okay, well, thank you to some bozo named John Coos. We appreciate your support as well.
Yeah, proud to do it.
Folks, please visit our Patreon at patreon.com/FW podcasts. All right, so now, remember, get onto the social media, tag us at JLI Podcast, use the hashtag JLMay2023 to talk about this issue. We want to hear your thoughts on this issue or the crossover overall, because, again, what we're doing is celebrating the Brave and the Bold comic series that ran from 2007 to 2010. And again, 25 different podcasts participating. We got three of them on our network alone. And we got this one we're doing right now. A couple of weeks ago, we did the Aquaman and Firestorm, the Fire and Water podcast. We covered issue number 32 with Aquaman and Etrigan the Demon, which was awesome. Then just last week on Once Upon a Geek, we covered Brave and the Bold number 30 with Dr. Fate and Green Lantern, one of my favorite issues of all time. And we've got lots of other podcasty friends who are participating in the JL May crossover, including
Overlook Dark Knight, Dial F for Flanger, The Bat Pod,
Legion Podcast, The Legion Project, Teal Productions,
Right On Network, Justice Trek, Pulp Culture Affidavit,
It All Comes Back to Superman, The Long Box Crusade, Resurrections, and Adam Warlock and Thanos Podcast,
Married with Comics, Superman in Crisis, The Lantern Cast,
Podcast of Oa, Rolled Spine, Weird Warriors,
Magazines and Monsters, Head Speaks, Coffee and Comics,
Waiting for Doom, and Fan Holes Podcast. So lots of folks out there participating. Please go and check out all these shows. There'll be links in the show notes as well. And you can find on social media using the hashtag JLMay2023. All right, so we need to start talking more about this. So the issue itself is, there's a discussion to be had there. But before that, let's talk about the characters. So let's talk about Booster Gold and Magog. And normally, by the way, this is the part where I'd ask John about his history with the JLI. But you can just go back to listen to episode 51 from December 2022 to hear John's origin there. So to put things in perspective, this issue of The Brave and the Bold, number 23, was on the shelves the same month as Booster Gold, number 20. Which that run, by that point, Jeff Johns had left the book and it was being done by Dan Jurgens. But that particular issue, it's worth mentioning, was actually done by Keith Giffen, drawn by Dan Jurgens. Now, the other character, Magog, yeah, we're teaming up Booster Gold and Magog. I think this is the first time we've actually used the name of the podcast. Sorry, folks. We buried the lead on that one. At this point, Magog had been appearing in the Justice Society of America book off and on for about 9 months. He'd had a one-shot called JSA Kingdom Come Special Magog number 1. That was about 6 months before this. And now Magog is going to get his own ongoing series shortly after this. About 4 months after this Brave and the Bold issue, Magog number 1 will come out, written by Keith Giffen. So a little JLI connection there. So I got to ask you, what is your own origin story with like Booster Gold? How'd you find the character? What made you fall in love with him?
Well, yeah. So as you referenced, you know, from our podcast from about 6 months ago, Mike's first exposure to JLI was the Moving Day episode of number 8. But coincidentally, that was my first exposure to Booster Gold as well. And he's on the cover.
Yeah.
And I was an instant fan. And, you know, after Power Girl, Booster's probably my favorite second or third tier character, depends on who's keeping score of these things, like in the DCU. I really like the character. I really like how he's evolved from the original to today. And he's just, I like him. He's a cool guy.
I got to agree. The evolution's really interesting. I love where they positioned him at this point where we're reading as, what is it, the greatest hero you've never heard of or something like that, or whatever the tagline is. Absolutely love how they turned him around in that way. Now, for me, again, thanks for asking. I bought the first several issues of Booster Gold right off the stand when they were published. I don't know what, other than, you know, it was the 80s and it was a number one. It's probably why I bought it, right? So I collected it monthly for a while. I looked it up last night. I collected, it looks like, the first 14 issues. And then I continued to drop in occasionally. And I loved the character right from the beginning. The 1980s, you know, vibe of capitalism and all that stuff. It felt new. It felt fresh. And I loved it.
Yeah.
Then, of course, I eventually start reading the Giffen DeMatteis JLI, and the bromance between, you know, Booster and Ted. It's one of the greatest ideas that in comics, where you take two completely unrelated characters and they just clicked. It just worked. It shouldn't have. There was no reason. There was no precedent. It just worked perfectly. And we're sitting here, 30 years later, 35 years later, and it's a great bromance when Ted's alive. But So I continue to follow him through all the various Justice League incarnations. Legends, yes, even Extreme Justice, all those various things. And I love that, you know, he featured prominently in 52 and the ongoing and all that, picked up that book, of course. And it's worth mentioning, by the way, so that book went through Jeff Johns, Dan Jurgens, and Giffen and DeMatteis. I mean, what a pedigree of writers there. But the thing I think is most noteworthy about Booster, and I don't know if I've ever said this on the air or not, I'm not sure, but he is one of the most successful, completely original DC characters after Crisis. Because after Crisis, you get a whole slew of new characters, but they're all derivative in some way, shape, or form. Like Harlequin, great new character, but she's really a derivative of the Joker, in a way. Connor, is Superboy, derivative of Superman. You know, there's all these great characters that come along, but they're all connected to someone else. Booster, completely original. In fact, the only two like really successful DC characters that I can think of after Crisis that are completely original are Booster Gold and Amanda Waller. And both of them have gone on to be, I don't know if mainstream's the right word, but in some regards, they've been in movies or TV shows. I mean, they're either household names or close enough. And I think that's a huge testament to him.
I totally agree, man. In fact, I think you must be reading my Twitter feed, because when I reread the original Dan Jurgens run a couple of months ago, I posted a picture on it or something, and I said, clearly the most successful new character in DC Universe post-Crisis, hands down.
Okay.
You stole that from me, didn't you?
I'm sure that you were the first person to ever say that.
but it's, you know, Harley's Harley, right?
Yep.
I mean, I like her and everything, a little overexposed and stuff, but you're right. She's kind of the Joker partner or whatever. And, you know, and I always thought it was funny that, you know, Harley Quinn's a funny name because there was a character named Harlequin before that. So
exactly.
Yeah. Booster was straight up original. And you mentioned the Booster Beetle connection. It's kind of your classic Abbott and Costello, Laurel and Hardy kind of thing where it just works.
Yeah, it really does. Now, I will have to freely admit, I do read your Twitter feed from time to time, because that honestly, it's a big part of why you got the gig for this episode. This episode came up kind of unexpectedly. This was not part of my original plan. But when JL May started coming about, this kind of slotted in. I'm like, oh, I didn't have plans for this one. I got to figure it out. And I was looking on Twitter and I saw you posting about the 2007 to 2011 Booster Gold series. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is perfect, because we had such a great time chatting last time and I want to get you back. So you read that recently, right?
I did. And, you know, thanks to, I guess, maybe to you. I don't want to give you too much credit or anything, but, you know, I've been kind of like nostalgic about, you know, the sort of post-Crisis to Flashpoint era, which I have concluded is the best era of comics ever.
You are correct.
And the stories are so great. And so I reread the original Jurgens run. Then I kind of went into 52 because it's also Booster related. And I love the Infinite Crisis era, despite what you guys, I'm going to say it on, this might be the first person to say it on air. I'm okay with Ted Kord and Max Lord. I just consider it all canon of that era, and it is what it is. And if it wasn't for that, Booster wouldn't have had all his struggles and stuff. So I just accept it. And so, but like,
all right, folks. Well, thanks for coming. Next month we go back to breakdowns and play the music.
Yeah. No, but I reread 52, and then I went right into that Booster series. And gosh, I was just like, oh, this is so good. And yes, the writers transition, but they're all great writers, right? Like,
oh yeah, from
Johns, I think Dixon's in there, and then Jurgens, and then Giffen and DeMatteis, and then it goes right up to Flashpoint, and then Booster's involved in Flashpoint in a way that I don't think any other character besides the Flash is involved in Flashpoint until Flashpoint happens, you know, like on the run up to. So thank you for recognizing that. Like, I really dig Booster, and I currently got Booster on the mind, you know.
Well, and I'm glad it worked out. So I haven't reread his series since original publication, the 2007-2011 one. So you got to remind me, like, since it's fresh in your mind, what are a couple highlights from that just really stand out?
Oh, man. Even before I reread it, right? It's just like, you know, there's certain things in comic history where you just remember, like, how you felt when you read it, right? So, like, I just love the whole notion, as you mentioned earlier, the greatest hero you've never known theme, right? Mm-hmm. Rip Hunter, he basically kind of enlists Booster to, like, fix anomalies anomalies in the space-time continuum, but no one can know he's doing it. So he plays up this shallow, self-serving history, sort of like the QVC of superheroes, sort of commercialization. He plays that up even more than he did before, as almost like an alter ego. Mm-hmm. Like a superhero has an alter ego to a superhero, which is like kind of unique, right? So I think for me, the most memorable thing is Booster's attempt to prevent the Joker from paralyzing Barbara Gordon in the Killing Joke. And that appears in issue number 5 of this Booster Gold series. And it's kind of crappy how Rick Hunter plays a part in this. So in the first few issues that Johns wrote, Booster is really intent on going back in time, preventing Max Lord from killing Ted, right?
Right, right.
And, because he's like his best friend. But Rip insists, there's certain things that you can't change in the past. And, this concept called solidified time. So, so no matter how many times you go back, you can't fix it. And so Booster still can't kind of come to grips with that. So then in this issue, Rip tells Booster that Barbara Gordon wasn't supposed to be shot and paralyzed by the Joker. So he sends Booster back in time to prevent it. And then Booster fails numerous times. And he goes back 5, 6, 7, 10 times, tries to stop it. And each time he fails, and he gets tortured. He gets beat up. And it's pretty intense in the book. And then what would be after his final attempt, and this is where I think Rip Hunter is a jerk, is he says, oh, well, sorry, Booster, this is an object lesson of solidified time. I just did this to you to teach you that you can't save Ted Kord. It's well, really, bro? You literally sent him back in time a dozen times or something to get his butt kicked and tortured just to prove a point? That's kind of hardcore, man.
Dude, that's like a Batman dick move.
Yeah, it's harsh, but then it kind of plays out later. It's 7 issues later in Booster Gold 1 million. 1 million, that 1 million.
Oh, series. Yeah. I remember. They did a 0 issue too.
yeah, they did. And I can't remember exactly the storyline, even though I just read it, but I'm reading comics like Mad Men. But there's this segue in the comic where Batman summons him to the Batcave. I need you to come to the Batcave right now. So Booster goes to the Batcave, and then it's almost like a splash page. Batman just drops on the floor 12 pictures of Booster all messed up, photographs. And Booster's like, where'd you get these? And Batman goes, from a camera the Joker had on him the night he shot and paralyzed Barbara Gordon. I've held on to them for years. When you showed up, you weren't wearing the same uniform. You were younger, so I waited until you grew up. And then Booster tells Batman about how he tried to prevent it and the concept of solidified time. And then Booster goes on this whole thing about how he's a failure and is a joke. And then Batman goes, let the world think you're crazy. If that's what it takes to be the best you can be, Michael, you proved me wrong. You proved yourself wrong. If you ever need someone to talk to, I might not be Ted Kord, but I'll listen. And it's just
wow.
When I read that, I was just oh, you just imagine Batman is the most skeptical of everyone. Mm-hmm. He's the guy who's got fail safes on taking out all the good guys. And he's telling Booster, I get you, man. You're good. And I'm here for you. It's cool. It's kind of like why you read comics for those moments. You read 1,000 stories about some character, and then you go, oh, shoot, that was awesome.
Well, I really like, too, is if you think about it from the JLI perspective, they were teammates, right? Working side by side, and Batman thought he was a joke, and now he figures it all out, and he realizes all those years together were something else entirely. So it's sort of like a revelation for Batman. That's really cool. Wow.
It's a revelation for Batman, and then, I love the way it's kind of retconned a little bit. It's now you have to go back, because we all, are JLI fans, and we remember all this stuff, and you're like, oh, Batman knew the whole time that Booster someday would be legit. it plays in your mind, right?
That's wild. Oh, wow. Yeah. I got to go back and reread. I haven't read that since publication. I got to go back and check that one out again.
You just might, if you want to just cut to the chase, because I know you're a busy guy, you can just read number 5 and then read that in 1 million.
That saves me a lot of time. It saves me the 900,999 other issues I got to read in between, right?
Exactly. Yeah, you save yourself the trouble, man.
There we go.
You can read all the first 200 Brave and the Bolts.
So clearly we are big Booster Gold fans. So now we got to talk about the other side of the comic, because it is a team up of sorts between Booster Gold and Magog. Yes, this is Magog from Kingdom Come, who then is kind of not from Kingdom Come, but kind of is. And he's in the DC Universe running around in the Geoff Johns Justice Society of America series. So I'll let you start. How's that?
Well, this is
where,
kind of funny.
Where do you land on Magog?
It's funny. Like, I don't know if it was last Saturday or some, you know, somewhere around there. I was doing my errands and stuff, and I listened to your Firewater podcast where you guys covered The Brave and the Bold with Aquaman and the Demon. And you were covering, like, what's coming up next on the whole Jail May thing. And then you mentioned this one. And then Rob Kelly, I think he said it best. And he goes, no offense to Booster Gold. I like Booster Gold. If it's anything, and Magog, well, it's like, all right. And that's kind of sums this up a little bit. Now, the funny thing is, because you knew you were going to have me on, you could have covered Brave and the Bold number 7 with Wonder Woman and Power Girl, but you, like, for some reason, you chose this issue. I kind of feel like, well, we'll get this Koos guy to do the Magog one. You know, like, but no, seriously, though. But dude, Wonder Woman, Power Girl, like, Justice League Europe, man, even though, like, Wonder Woman was just on the cover of the first
she was
one.
Then three panels.
I sold the comic book. Thank you. I'm out.
Right.
No, but seriously, dude. No, I'm just kidding. Are you covering that one?
No. Okay. So I'm not covering that particular issue. However, across the podcast crossover, we've got I believe every single issue of the Brave and the Bold series covered from this run. And specifically, issue number 7 was claimed by the folks over the Right On Network, and they're going to do a lot better job than I would, because, you know, I'd just be saying how hot the ladies were the whole time or something. So yeah, definitely go over and check out the Right On Network for Brave and the Bold number 7, where you can hear about Wonder Woman and Power Girl. Absolutely.
Well, hey, Right On Network guys, who had me as a guest as a result of our episode, just a short thing back during the holidays. If you need a stand-in, I'm ready. I just reread it. It's a cool comic book. It's fun. Power Girl, Wonder Woman. It's a cool one shot. And so anyway,
all right, talk about Magog.
Oh my god. Do we have to talk? No. But you know what's funny? I mean, look. Here's the thing, like, even with his, like, sort of ridiculous, I'm the goat of superheroes outfit, you know, like, you know, he kind of made sense in Kingdom Come, right? I mean, like, we don't have to get into the whole storyline of Kingdom Come, but, you know, that's kind of where he should have stayed, right?
Mm-hmm.
I reread that as prep for this, too. And, like, he kind of got his butt kicked by Superman in the second issue, I think. And then, yeah, that's where he should have stayed. On Earth 22, as an Elseworlds state, never to be heard from again. But, you know, I think Mark Waid and DC thought they had something going with this guy. And so, and Mark Waid's awesome. I'm rereading his Flash run right now. And I love Kingdom Come. But, you know, I do think they thought they had something going. And, you know, and then they, you know, as you said earlier, they brought him into the Justice.
I'm going to defend Mark Waid for just a second, because unless I'm mistaken, Mark Waid never touched the character again. Like, he did Kingdom Come with Geoff Johns brought him back for Justice Society of America.
Okay, that's fair. But okay, I stand corrected. So, like, okay, whether DC collectively thought they had something going mm-hmm. on
yeah.
with Magog or Magog, whatever I call him. And then, you know, it's so much so, like, the JSA book was so popular that they had a spinoff called the JSA All-Stars. And so, like, it was kind of the younger ones and the more brash ones. And then, like,
who was the team leader? I don't remember.
Oh, Power Girl?
Yeah.
But there was a power struggle in the first couple of issues, first three issues between the two of them.
Oh yeah.
And then, you know, maybe DC finally realized that they were running out of gas on this guy, Magog, and she kicks his butt and he, like, walks off. And I don't think he's been in a comic book since.
Well, did JSA All-Stars come out after his own ongoing series? Because I don't remember.
I'd have to look, but JSA All-Stars was, like, right up against Flashpoint.
You're right.
And so I don't quote me on that. Somebody might be able to, you know, correct me in the notes or something. But I mean, they will.
They're vicious.
Yeah. If he did appear again, I don't know, in pre-Flashpoint, but I don't think he's been in post-Flashpoint.
That would be good.
So, and then there's this whole thing, and we don't have to get into it because it's probably a whole thing, but, like, I went to Sunday school and stuff, and like, you know, the Old Testament's got Gog and Magog, and there's something about Armageddon. I don't remember exactly, but so I never understood why by Wade had those names and stuff. And I kind of spent half a second looking it up, and I couldn't understand it. And maybe we should just leave it there.
It's fair enough.
I don't know. If you want to talk, I don't know if you got any thoughts on
that. No, on the biblical side, I got nothing. I got nothing to add on that one. Other than if it's tied to an apocalypse, I mean, he did cause a massive apocalypse sort of in Kansas and kill a lot of people. That could be the tie. But again, I don't have any recollection of the biblical connection at all. So for me, like, again, thanks for asking. You're really good at this. The whole idea
what
of
what about
like,
you?
Oh, well,
what about you, Shank?
Thanks, John. That's very thoughtful of you. there are a lot of brilliant creators at DC, right? And they've written and drawn some massively popular stories that were like, that did the whole deconstruction, right? A thing of the superhero concept, like Watchmen and Dark Knight Returns and Kingdom Come specifically, right? I mean, these were written to deconstruct the superhero concept. And in there, usually it's got like some sort of dystopian society or whatever. And you've got, you know, a lot of violence. And the primary focus is grim, dark, what I'll call them, grim, dark superheroes, right? And they, the whole point is to make you think, right? They're very thought-provoking, and you consider the negative impact these grim, dark superheroes have on the world around them. And unfortunately, from my perspective, it seems like DC collectively keeps learning the wrong lessons from these particular grim, dark comics. Like, instead of seeing Watchmen or Kingdom Come as these tales that's like a unique vision about the negative impact of these grim, dark heroes, DC sees the dollar signs, right, associated with these books. You know, they keep selling. I mean, Watchmen's what, like the best-selling trade paperback of all time, I think, or something like that, or at least it was. So they see this as an opportunity to capitalize on the success. So, so like in the Magog thing, like you said, DC thought they had something there. It's like DC doesn't see that Magog, he's practically a parody of a Marvel grim dark character from the 90s. I mean, he's clearly a pastiche of Cable, right? I mean, he's got the robotic arm and the slash to the eye, the whole thing. And DC doesn't see, like you said, the whole point of Magog's story was in Kingdom Come. That's where his story started. He served a great purpose. He pushed that story forward. And that's where his story ends. It doesn't need further exploration. And I realize like some writer felt like maybe it did. He's wrong. So instead, DC saw that Kingdom Come makes lots of money and Magog was controversial. So let's do more of that. You know, and it's just, it's wrongheaded as far as I'm concerned. And I realize that's a kind of a negative opinion, but there's a lot of this. I mean, Geoff Johns, I want to say up front, I love his writing. He has written some of my absolute favorite comics of all time. Like that first JSA run by him. Stinking. The best superhero comic in the 90s. I'm sorry, of the 2000s.
Hands down.
Yeah. But on the other side, Geoff seems to be very guilty of going after these grim, dark stuff and going back to the well. I mean, with Watchmen and Doomsday Clock and the Kingdom Come stuff into his Justice Society run, it just, there's a lot of it. And again, I'm not trying to bash Johns. It's just, you can't help but notice that. Now, on the flip side, I will say, I heard from some folks that when the Magog monthly series starts, it's written by Keith Giffen, our beloved JLI, Keith Giffen, and apparently he did do some interesting things with the book. And given Giffen's creativity, I bet he did. It's just unfortunately not something high on my list to read.
Yeah, I mean, I got a lot of stuff to read. If I get through like the next 400 issues on my, you know, list, I might check it out.
You know, I probably won't.
But I think you're completely right, and we don't have to go into a whole thing of it. But yeah, I was a little disappointed. Well, it with Doomsday Clock, aside from the fact it took 19 months to put out 12 issues or whatever. but like, do you have to go there with, you know, the button and the flash and all this stuff? It's like, where's this going? Are we going to see Rorschach hanging out with the Question and Dr. Manhattan hanging out with Captain Atom? Like, what's going on here? You know what I'm saying?
And more importantly, was it necessary? Did it it tell a story that needed to be told?
That's a whole other thing.
Yeah. All right. Yeah. Well, we're now, I don't know, some 40 minutes into the podcast. We should probably talk about the comic.
Maybe. Do we have to? No.
A little bit. So, okay, folks. We are going to post some images from this issue. Again, Brave and the Bold number 23. It'll be out on our website, which is firewaterpodcast.com/JLI. And we are going to cover the Brave and the Bold number 23. From DC Comics, cover dated July 2009, was on the shelves May 20th, 2009. Cover price was $2.99. Page count was 22 pages. And the cover is by Dan Juergens and Norm Rapmund. And so the cover is, it's a shot of Magog. And he's flexing his big old bicep. And in the reflection of his bicep, you can see Booster Gold coming at him with his Legion flight ring. And Dan took the time to draw the flight ring on his hand and do the reverse because it's a mirror. That's pretty clever there. So what do you think of the cover, buddy?
Well, it's kind of like I said earlier. It's like there's something going on where they thought they had something going on with this guy, because most of the Brave and the Bold covers from this run, you kind of got, you know, almost equal proportionality representation of the stars, you know, on the cover. This one, you got massive Magog, and then you got like, oh, Booster is a reflection on his arm. who's the star of this comic book?
Right.
Anyway, that's enough said.
I'll add that I do like the angle of his head and how it's kind of down, and the shadows have blacked out his eyes entirely and his mouth and chin. That looks pretty cool. I do like the background. I don't even know how to describe it. It's just like smears of reds and pinks. And it just makes a nice kind of non-singular color for the background. Just adds some texture to the back. I like that.
I'm burning to know if there's any of your listeners that will comment like what his costume is about. Like maybe like read it sometime, but I just went, nah. Like the goat head thing. Like what is it? What's going on there?
Yeah, that's literally what I was going to say is it's guy with a goat head. I mean, it's well, it's Cable. It's Cable. I mean, look at him. He looks like Cable on purpose.
Yeah. Well, it's well drawn.
Oh yeah. It's Dan Juergens with Norm Rapmund. It's going to look gorgeous. It's just, you know, and he didn't invent the character, so I'm not going to blame Dan. I do like how they have the logos up there. You know, it says Booster Gold and Magog, and Booster is his logo from his ongoing series. And Magog, it's actually kind of written in the Kingdom Come font, which is kind of clever.
That is true.
Yeah. All right. So inside the issue, the writer and penciler is Dan Juergens. Inker is Norm Rapmund. Letter is Rob Lee. Colorist is Brian Miller. And editor is Joey Cavallari. So the name of the issue itself is Shadows of Tomorrow. All right. So I will freely admit that I stole some of my recap from another website, specifically Martin Gray. Yes, our own Martin Gray's Too Dangerous for Girl blog. This is, you know, it's interesting. This comic came out in an era where the internet existed. So people were blogging about it even then. So I stole a couple lines from there, Martin. So as a tribute to you, my friend. So here we go. The issue opens with Booster and Skeets racing to the time lab in response to alarms and finding Rip Hunter materializing, apparently in battle with some foe from the future. Using the time tech, they manage to rescue Rip without his assailant. And just before Rip passes out, he mutters the name Magog. Rip is clinging to a scrap of Superman's costume from the future. For those of us readers, it is clearly the S-Shield from Superman's Kingdom Come costume. Booster used the time machine to visit the future of Kingdom Come, but Rip pulls him back to the present almost immediately. Rip refuses to tell Booster about the future and Magog. It's one of those deals where he's protecting you from too much knowledge of your own future. Booster decides that he can at least begin researching Magog in the present, so Booster's investigation leads him to the country of Kandak, where Magog is tackling a terrorist attack and rescuing hostages. Suffice to say, Booster and Magog do not get along. The story ultimately demonstrates their vastly different methods of dealing with a crisis. You know, Magog, he's pretty good at tearing terrorists' arms off, but he's not so good on the little details, like maybe where the bombs are located or finding all the missing children. So, whereas Booster and Skeets set a much better example, rescuing the last few hostages and sending out a signal which blocks the explosives detonating. Booster and Magog, they're about to throw down when Rip suddenly arrives to stop Booster, saying that this confrontation with Magog is over. And Rip says that Magog's going to, quote, do a lot of good over the next couple years. He'll save lives, Booster. Important lives. End quote. Sort of ominous there, all right? And then Booster says to Magog as he's leaving, the day will come when you have to be stopped. And when it does come, I'll be the one to do it. And then the final caption box says, the beginning. So definitely looks like they're trying to set something up here. So what did you think of the issue, buddy?
Well, I mean, I have to say just for the record. So we talked about how I read all this Booster stuff, right? The original series, 52, the Booster series from this era. And then you asked me to be on this podcast. And I go, oh, I didn't even know this story existed. and so it was kind of cool. And so by being so fresh on that series, it was like structured the same exact way, you know, Dan wrote it, right? There's that. But in some ways, I thought, like, because some of those booster issues were kind of like Brave and the Bold, like buddy team up things anyway, it could have been just one of those, or maybe Dan just had it on the cutting room floor. I don't know, but it did fit into that series at the time. So there's that. It has the same feel, which is great, right? If it had been part of that series, I would have been just fine with it, right? It was no big deal, because some of those stories just ended in one or two issues anyway. So for what it is, it's well written, it's well drawn, it's cool. As for the actual story itself, you know, the whole terrorist thing and everything, well, there's one thing that is interesting, I think, is that a lot of the booster stuff deals with going to the past and stuff. This is kind of like, you mentioned it, this foreshadowing piece, and I guess we'll get to that in a second, but I guess the story leisurely goes along the terrorists and stuff, and at the time, you know, that was very part of our zeitgeist, the post 9/11 era and everything. Mm-hmm. But this there's this one part where, like you mentioned, where he, because the terrorist is holding this like trigger mechanism, right?
Yeah, dead man switch.
Yeah, dead man switch. If you let go of it, then the kids all die or whatever. And so his solution was, you know, to hold his hand, tear his arm off, and then Booster. There's a great couple panels where Booster like comes around the corner. And he goes like, "You tore his arm off?" And then he's got these wide eyes. He goes, "You tore his arm off."
Right.
I mean, but it's a pretty poignant scene, I guess.
And then, well, like, hold on. You gotta finish the other part. So, like, Magog realizes what he's about to do. He sends the kids away. He tells the kids, "All right, go in the other room, kids." He takes the guy's belt off, ties it around his arm. Yeah. And this was not spur of the moment. This was premeditated. He ties the belt around the guy's arm. He goes, "What are you doing?" He goes, "I'm making a tourniquet." And then he rips the guy's arm off. Just like, that's true. Oh my God.
I know. That, no, I kind of jumped past that, but you're right. This isn't like spur of the moment.
Right.
It's all planned out. And then he Booster says, "You tore his arm." And he's like, "So? What are you, some kind of maniac? You can't go around tearing people's arms off." But anyway, and the look on Magog's face, which actually you can't even see his eyes, is like, whatever. Like, this is what I do. You know, it's all right.
Let me ask you a question. If we were to frame this differently, let's say that the other character wasn't Magog, all right? Let's just say it was bad guy X, all right? So no connection to Kingdom Come, and no connection of getting in his own series and being a superhero, right? Or let's just say it's the Punisher instead. Like, I would feel probably very differently about this comic if it wasn't a character associated with Kingdom Come, and I didn't think this guy was going to get his own ongoing series. I would have been like, okay, he's the jerkweed of this issue. Booster schools him. Story done. Okay. I'd probably be fine with it. But the very fact that it's tied to Kingdom Come, and that I know this guy's going to be a protagonist at some point, is like, really bothers me.
Yeah. Punisher is probably the closest, technically a good guy. Mm-hmm. I was trying to, when you started going down this line, I was thinking, you know, maybe if Deathstroke was in a similar situation, maybe he would do something like this. I don't know. Maybe not. I don't know.
Except they don't wear goat horns.
They don't wear goat horns. But and then that thing you mentioned about the whole beginning thing, it kind of goes back to my thing before. Like, they were still planning stuff for this guy. They were clearly planning more for him, don't you think?
Yeah. I feel like Jurgens is trying to set up Booster Gold as like a reoccurring foil for Magog. I feel like they're definitely trying to build that. And again, they're 4 months out from the ongoing to happen. And so I feel like maybe at this point, they're like, they're not sure where that series is going to go. I'm like, okay, sure, use Booster Gold all you want. And then it just, like you said, it never happened.
Oh, yeah, because Flashpoint.
Yep. Now, it's also worth noting, so it's sort of interesting. Like you said, this issue sort of slots in and could have been Booster Gold number 20. I mean, really.
Yeah.
Even the cover kind of hints that, like you said, that you don't get equal billing on the cover. But if that had been a Booster Gold cover, it would have been fine, because you expect Booster, right, on the cover. He doesn't have to be the dominant figure on his own comic book. So I started wondering if maybe this was supposed to be a Booster Gold issue. But then I looked at the actual issue that was on the shelves. Issue number 20 was written by Keith Giffen. It's the only issue he wrote around that time. Mm. So presumably, you know, Keith wrote that so Dan could work on this book, right? So it's sort of interesting. So I'm thinking Giffen was probably already slated to write Magog, because it's only 4 months away at that point. And they were probably planning some kind of synergy there, where Dan's going to feature Magog Magog in a booster gold issue over here. And Keith Giffen, who's, again, tied to Magog, is going to be helping out on booster gold that month. So I feel like that was probably trying to work together to build the hype for Magog.
I'll concur.
How'd that hype work out, folks?
Yeah. Well, one other thing, and it goes back to me reading that recent one. By this point in the booster series, he's really confident in what he's doing, and he's really centered. I mean, I get that from this issue, too. He's got a real strong moral compass now, and mm-hmm. it's that greatest hero you never heard of kind of thing where he's got his stuff together. And so I don't know if you picked up on that, there's no booster goofball. We love that guy, but he's clearly like a real superhero in the realest sense. Does that make sense?
No, it absolutely does. In fact, I thought about it. He cracks one joke in the beginning that's sort of, kind of JLI-esque, and Skeets calls him on it. And then the rest of it, I was actually surprised thinking he's supposed to play the goofball hero. Like you said, he's supposed to play the QVC hero. And yet there's a page here where he's talking to the Kondok military and there's a cameraman filming him. And I was thinking, okay, he's going to play up the buffoon here in front of the camera, but he doesn't. He plays up, like you said, the very stalwart, I've got this superhero. And I was kind of surprised to see that because I'm like, oh, okay. He is being very, very much the true blue, going to save the day hero here.
Well, okay. We don't have to spend a lot of time on it, but that's what goes back to this alter ego of superhero of a superhero thing. I think by this point for Booster, he actually has to remember to be lame.
Okay.
Because in the Booster series, there's a couple times where he deliberately goes, God, do I have to act like a jackass all the time?
Yeah,
like,
I remember that. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's already beyond that. He's mature now. He's past that commercialization. He's past the Glory Hound thing, the sponsor thing. And so maybe I'm reading too much into it. It's comic books and stuff. But, I really like that Booster now is like a man.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
No, I totally get it. Yeah. He is the, again, the true blue hero that you want. The kind of hero that inspires confidence, that makes you feel like he's going to save the day. Like those kids automatically felt like they could trust him when he rescued him. Whereas Magog, they were terrified of him.
Yeah. And in the past, they would have written Booster like, are you Green Lantern? Kind of thing. And that we're kind of past that.
Well, the guy does say, the Kondok military guy goes, you're that Buster Gold guy.
Yeah.
Say that you'd mess up a 2-car parade.
That's true. That's a great line, though.
That is a good bit.
But Booster doesn't feel that way about himself at all.
Exactly.
Awesome. And there's some really, I'm scanning through the digital. Mm-hmm. Some guy introduced me to the panel by panel mode a few months ago.
Really? This must be some brilliant person.
Yeah. There's some really intense, like, quality drawings of Booster's expressions in this comic book.
Oh, well, Dan's a master at that. Norm Rapmoon is an excellent inker for him. So, yeah, when he's flying through the air, he's got this real intense look in his eyes. And then there's that one panel. Now, this isn't a facial expression thing, but there's one panel where the guy fires the RPG rocket and just cooks one of the Kondok military guys. And you just see, it's almost like Kirby dots of him just immolated and a tank burning. And it's just, like, horrific. Oh, but it's incredibly well illustrated.
It's a pretty violent issue if you really think about it. Aside from the arm being torn off. There's some serious action in this too. It's a great issue. Let's go with that. It's great.
It's a lot of fun.
It has some stuff in it that's really good, despite Magog.
I'm willing to say that all of my trepidation of this issue, it comes from Magog. Like, straight up. Again, if you replaced him with the Punisher or even Deathstroke, I'd probably be perfectly fine. And it's like, okay, yeah, it's a straightforward good guy, bad guy story, and there we go. But because of the character, I just can't get past it. And a good example of this, and this is my opinion, you can tell me your thoughts here. Like, they do not paint Magog in a good light at all in this comic book. Even a Punisher fan, I think, would be disappointed if it was Punisher, because he does some Punisher type stuff, but the trajectory of the story is from Booster's point of view. At no point does Magog give a good counter argument. When Booster comes at him and says, you're just violent, it's not like Magog had a good argument to say no, I'm doing it this way because I have to, and blah, 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 blah. Instead, he's just like, no, man, you're soft. We should fight. And it's like,
no, I know. To your point, I'm scanning through. I know there's this one scene where like he asks Skeets, are your scanners telling you much? And he goes, only the Magog and several children have left the gym. And he goes, and Booster says, at least that means the kids are alive. And Skeets says, if the claims are to be believed, the building must still be wired with explosives. And he goes, which means we're not out of the woods. Booster, I am reading two small heat signatures in the gym. I believe Magog may have overlooked them. And Booster goes, why am I not surprised? Idiot.
Mm.
He's like basically saying, like, this guy's reckless. He's not committed to saving all the children. He's overlooking things. Yep. And Booster's like, is everyone safe?
Yeah.
And Magog looks bad.
Well, and again, yeah. And then when they finally do have an argument about their ideologies, it's all Booster-sided. Like, if, again, I keep going back to the Punisher example. Forgive me. But I mean, that's basically what we're dealing with here, right? If you read the same story with Punisher and Daredevil, there would be a discussion, an argument between them, and both sides would make an argument that you go, oh, well, I don't like what Punisher did, but I can kind of see what he's saying. That mm-hmm. never happens with Magog here. I mean, literally, it just, Magog goes to like elementary school bully and just says, you don't like it? Let's fight right now. Come on. And like, yeah, really?
I know.
Yeah, Magog, if I knew the Magog monthly series was coming, I'd be like, no, I can skip that. Thanks.
Yeah, I did.
I do like that Magog throws around the term cape, referring to superheroes. He likes it a couple times. Like, well, you got a cape. Deal with it. And I don't remember DC using that phrase really that much. And for a character that gives off this sort of persona, it actually works for him. I kind of like it.
Yeah.
There, we said something positive.
Fair enough.
About Magog. Other than that, again, it's beautifully illustrated. The action is fun. Like, there's scenes that are worth talking about. But again, it's Rob said it right.
Yeah, Rob did get it right. Yeah. Maybe we made lemonade out of lemons, man. With this podcast.
That is kind of what John and I said off air beforehand when we were communicating and leading up to it. Like, well, we're going to have a heck of a great time having a good conversation about Magog.
Mission accomplished so far.
There we go. All right. Now we are going to get to the One Punch Award, where we're going to nominate our favorite moment from the issue, whether it be fantastic or shocking or freaking bloody or whatever. I'm probably leading with what my pick is. But anyway, you and I are both going to pick a moment, and only one's going to be awarded the coveted One Punch Award. You get to go first because you're the guest, which is unfortunate for everyone listening. But what's your pick, John?
God, I feel so lazy because I think I did this the first time we did a podcast where I mentioned my thing, which was back then the Starros on the faces of Dimitri's family. And then I said that was the One Punch or whatever it was back then. Was that the One Punch on JLE?
Oh, okay. I can't remember what won, but Yeah.
But I repeated myself. And so I'm going to go with the sequence that leads up to the arm being torn off.
Okay. All right. So the sequence being the part with the tourniquet and all that?
Yeah, all that stuff. Yeah.
Yeah.
We
absolutely picked the same moment. I mean, it's whether you love it or hate it or it has no place in a comic, there's no denying, again, him dismissing the children, taking off the guy's own belt, tying a tourniquet around it. And like, the guy's like, what's about to happen? You know, just it's horrible. Yeah. But I love it.
Yeah, Booster's reaction, like, oh, I'm like, it's obvious. It's really, there's no second place even.
And there's panels of just this dangling arm. I mean, that Magog's holding. It's just like, oh my God.
And the guy's face, like the terrorist's face.
Yeah.
In every panel where he's going through the procedure of like the tourniquet, the stretching out the arm.
If this was a Punisher comic, I probably would have been cheering for it. Cause I'm like, there have been eras of the Punisher that I read and enjoyed quite a bit, even with that level of violence and what was going on, because it was making a point that didn't get made here. But either way, I'm harping on something from earlier. Either way, we have both agreed. So congratulations to the dismembered arm. You are the winner of the One Punch Award. Please wear it with pride. I guess maybe staple it to your sleeve. I don't know. It is tangible as our love for that moment. All right, John. Now I need to ask a favor. Would you mind hanging around here for just a bit to keep an eye out on Magog? I am worried that he might rip off one of the arms of one of the folks in the audience. You know, if you could just throw yourself between Magog and like Symbol Pending or something and save their arm, could you do that for me, please?
That's a visual. I can do that. I can do that.
I appreciate your sacrifice.
Despite how ridiculous he looks, I don't know if I want to deal with the guy. I mean,
right?
But yes, I can do that for you.
Thank you, and for Simple Penny. So thank you so much, Sean. We appreciate it. We will bring you back at the end of the show. And after this podcast promo break, I'm going to read your listener feedback.
Hey, Sean, do you want to go over the checklist to make sure we are ready for the next phase of the Batman family reunion?
Sure thing, Paul.
Robin and Batgirl in team-up action?
Check.
Fried chicken?
Check. Man-Bat fighting a were-jaguar?
Check.
Deviled eggs?
Check. Potato salad?
Check.
Without the raisins?
Of course.
The Huntress fighting Catwoman and Poison Ivy?
Check. Lemonade?
Check.
Alfred and Commissioner Gordon keeping a secret from Bruce Wayne?
Check and check. Reprints or all new stories?
New stories and reprints until issue 10, and then nothing but brand new stories from there on out. Giant-sized issues?
A mere giant size until issue 16, and then dollar comics from issue 17 to 20 through the end of the run in Detective. Guest list?
Absolutely. We are having a number of Bat relatives visit the reunion, so listen in for your favorite Bat cousin.
All right, great. Then we're all ready for the Batman Family Reunion podcast, where we talk about Batman Family, the great comic book from the 70s and 80s. We'll discuss not only the stories, but also the text pages and ads, and we'll also find out what the Batman family was doing on the newsstands that month.
And since this is a reunion, we're inviting all of you, the Bat kinfolk, to listen in and to be part of the show.
Look for the Batman Family Reunion podcast on the Fire and Water Podcast Network.
Santa, who's there?
Hyperion to a satyr.
Follow Siskoid's deep scene-by-scene dive into adaptations of Shakespeare's Hamlet on Hyperion to a Satyr, the Fire and Water Network's Hamlet podcast. To listen or not to listen isn't a question, as you well know. Kenneth Branagh, Derek Jacobi, Mel Gibson, Laurence Olivier, Ethan Hawke, David Tennant, Classics Illustrated, and many more covered every episode. At fireandwaterpodcast.com or where you usually get your podcasts.
The rest is silence.
Justice Log.
All right, now before we get into your feedback, just a little bit of news. First up, Justice League International favorites are getting some attention in current DC comic books. Just recently announced is Fire and Ice, Welcome to Smallville, coming in September. It's a new miniseries by Joanne Starr and Natasha Bustos. And it's a miniseries featuring our favorite characters, Fire and Ice. And now if you want a taster of it, be sure to check out the Power Girl special coming on May 30th, just a few days from the release of this recording, because there will be a Fire and Ice backup strip that leads into the new miniseries. So all right, here's the description for Fire and Ice, Welcome to Smallville number one. So Superman sent the former Justice Leaguers packing for Smallville to lie low following their extremely public and utterly disastrous mission in Baltimore, and in doing so, doomed them to a fate worse than death. Irrelevance. Ice finds herself drawn to the quiet life and dreams of planting roots, while Fire will do just about anything to get the hell out of Dodge and back on the superhero circuit, including challenging the DC Universe's biggest villains to a knockdown, drag-out, livestream brawl in the streets of Smallville. Wow, that sounds fantastic. Again, it's called Fire and Ice, Welcome to Smallville. That's coming in September, but the Power Girl special with the first teaser of that is out on May 30th. Also, and this one just blows my mind, there is a 48-page special coming in August called Nort's Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. Yeah, I'm not making this up. So remember Marvel did all those swimsuit editions in the 90s? It's basically the same thing. It's a book of pinups of characters like Batman in a Speedo and Catwoman in a bikini. And, you know, it's all these DC characters in bathing suits. But for whatever reason, they've labeled it as Nort's Illustrated Swimsuit Edition. I can't even begin to fathom why, but it's awesome. So it will feature 48 pages of art, and here's some of the folks included in here. Amanda Connor, Paul Pelletier, Nicholas Scott, Mikhail Janin, Terry Dodson, Babs Tarr, Pete Woods, Joe Quinones, Mike Allred, and a bunch of other ones. It sounds like an absolute hoot. Again, Nort's Illustrated Swimsuit Editions will be in your shops in August.
Now, I gave a plug to this last month, but I'll do it again. Keith Giffen has his own podcast now called Keith Giffen, I'm Not Dead Yet. So be sure to check that out on all the various podcast platforms. It's a lot of fun and some utterly bizarre stories of Keith's life growing up. Then a few months ago, we had JMD Mateus on the show to promote his D-Multiverse series of books via Kickstarter. Well, the Kickstarter has shipped. So if you backed it, be sure to look for that and don't forget to vote before the date is up. And then finally, just a little bit of personal news. Over on my Once Upon a Geek podcast, we did a JL May episode similar to this one. We covered a story with Dr. Fate and Hal Jordan, which was absolutely amazing. A beautiful story. And I just want to mention it here because there are two pages lifted directly from Justice League number 7. A couple of pages where Dr. Fate is dealing with the Gray Man and the Lords of Order. So it's pretty cool the way it ties into our beloved Justice League International, and it's a great story. So it's definitely worth checking out. Again, that's over on the Once Upon a Geek podcast feed. All right, folks, now it is time to get into your comments. Get out on the social media, be part of the discussion. Tag us at JLI Podcast. As I always say, it's about building a community of online JLI fans around the show. And remember, when you're posting your comments, if you're outside of the United States, let me know, and we will assign you the appropriate embassy. All right, so for this episode, we are tackling your comments from our website, email, social media, all that kind of stuff. Just pulling bits and pieces because there is a lot of feedback to go through. But we are covering our most recent episode featuring Justice League Quarterly number 4 with my guest, Mike Harlow. All right, so first up, we heard from JMD Mateus himself. You know, we talked a lot about in Justice League Quarterly, there were three different stories, and some of those stories featured the Cat, right? And those stories were done by JMD Mateus, Marshall Rogers, and P. Craig Russell. Well, JMD Mateus let us know that the Cat stories were also plotted by Marshall Rogers and that he just scripted them. I gotta tell you, I mean, it still blows my mind that the amount of talent on those Cat pages. I mean, Marshall Rogers, P. Craig Russell, JMD Mateus, essentially doing funny Garfield comic strips is just bonkers. And it's amazing and wonderful. And I hope they had a blast doing them. Then we'll hear from Derek Robertson, the artist of the middle story there, Cracked Ice, the artist himself. He says that was his first ever published mainstream story with JMD Mateus. I asked him how much fun was it drawing it, and he said, I was such a huge fan of that book when I got the job, and getting to draw Guy Gardner and Ice's first kiss, like a dream, especially working with JMD Mateus. And he says, Kevin McGuire was always an inspiration, and the story was a labor of love. Oh, that's fantastic. Thank you so much, Derek. Then from Damian Drew A. Whiter from our England embassy, he does the Should I Love This Comic podcast. He gave us some further information about Derek Robertson. He says, I don't know if you've ever read the Modern Masters book about Kevin Maguire, but where he was asked about the one punch scene, he refers to Derek Robertson telling him that it was a significant moment in the development of Derek's art style. Kevin says that Derek said seeing Blue Beetle rubbing his eyes under his goggles helped solidify his idea of drawing superheroes as real people interacting with their surroundings. This is such a key element of what makes Derek Robertson's art sing on the Justice League Quarterly. They are real people interacting with the world around them. That's great insight, Damien. Thank you for sharing that. Then Damien goes on to respond to our question about breakdowns. We asked folks, you know, do they remember breakdowns fondly or not? Because there does seem to be sort of a negative connotation towards breakdowns, and we're trying to sort of put our finger on it. And he says, I do agree that the general reaction to breakdowns is negative. It's very hard to put my finger on why. Some of it might just be the era. At the time, other books began to take up the attention of the readers, and I think sometimes a consistent book can begin to look dull by comparison. I know for sure that by this point, books like Sandman, Shade the Changing Man, and Doom Patrol were more exciting for me. Even Keith Giffen and JMD Mateus were producing books that were captivating me more elsewhere, such as The Quiet Darkness. I was getting going over in the 5-year later Legion, and JMD Mateus had just started his run on Spectacular Spider-Man. You know, those are good points. There were some amazing books on the shelf by this point. Yeah, that's a good point. And then he says, I wonder if another reason that breakdowns is badly remembered is the general event fatigue. I know that part of the reason that my pre-Vertigo series were my favorite at the time was the feeling that there were too many events going on at once in the DC Universe. The fact that breakdowns occurs as the same time as War of the Gods and Armageddon 2001 means it gets slightly lost in the noise. You know, that is really interesting. And how interesting that we're talking about event fatigue all the way back in 1990, right? And we're still talking about event fatigue here in 2023. Then we heard from Gus Casals from our Argentina embassy. He does podcasts such as Ian Reed's Crisis that he does with his husband, where Ian is going through the crisis in Heaven and Earth. He also does Alfred Pennyworth Presents podcast and more. Gus says, not really commenting on the episode or the content this time, but your decision for this to be the last Justice League Quarterly episode. Not only do I see your aim to go straight into the Giffen DeMatteis issues, but also, let's face it, Justice League Quarterly never lived up to the expectation of the first issue, and each subsequent one proved weaker and weaker to the point of not even being readable. I have copies of all of them from number 3 onwards, and I never reread them again in 30 years. That said, realizing that Jack and Petey were in number 4 made me go back, unbag, and reread. Great stories, and enjoy the cattails even more than the lead story. And then he says, thank you so much for the shout out to his new podcast, Ian Reed's Crisis. So yeah, folks, this is great. If you go out and look at Gus's Twitter feed from April, or I'll look at his husband, Ian Gutierrez's Twitter feed, Gus took my promoting his podcast here in the feedback, played it out loud for Ian, recorded Ian's video reaction, and then turned it into a video preview or trailer, really commercial for Ian Reed's Crisis. And it's fantastic. I mean, I have showed it to, I think, everybody in my family. I love it so much. It makes me laugh. It makes me smile. And I'm so glad that Gus and Ian enjoyed it. So, hey, hope you guys are really enjoying Crisis. All right, let's move on. We heard from Chris Pine, who says that for the first story, the art is great and it fits perfectly into the JLI world. I love the bungling caper story, but there's something missing to the rhythm of this one. As Mike Harlow noted, the banter, the pop culture references, running gags, they just weren't as strong. This story kind of illustrated why this version of the JLI had to end when the creative team left. No one else could really capture the Giffen DiMatteis magic, blending humor, heart, and action. You know, Chris, that you make a good observation that it is very difficult to replicate what Giffen and DiMatteis had. Then he says, I like the discussion you both had about Guy and how deep down he does care about his teammates. Guy's a more complex character than given credit for, and his interactions with Oberon in this issue really kind of showcases Guy's self-sabotage when it comes to relationships. He and Oberon probably could be friends, and really, Guy could have been a respected member of the League, but Guy thinks he knows how people feel about him and how they all see him as a big jerk, so he preemptively acts like a jerk to their face just so he's less vulnerable when people are jerks to him for being a jerk. Good insight, Chris. Good insight. Then we're from Bucky749, the American Samurai. He has his own YouTube channel. He says, it was an interesting book, a great series of stories, and a great guest host. Then Bucky goes on to a few other topics, including talking about the Ultraverse with my buddy David Gutierrez. All great comments that made my heart sing, but I'm not going to spend time on the show since this is a Justice League show. All right, then we heard from our buddy Tim Price from the Outcasters, Batman and the Outsiders podcast, and the Batgirl to Huntress podcast. He says that James DeMatteis' story is so good. Revisiting our friends from this Dr. Fate series, Derek Robertson's phenomenal artwork, Max's drinking non-problem, and JM DeMatteis obviously loving the you can say that again gag. Two extra notes, when Fire and Ice are refreshing in the bathroom, Ice mentions borrowing Fire's black dress to wear with the crystal. She says, maybe I'm not as innocent as you all think. Oh no, have we found the root of Tom King's Human Target series? I refuse to accept that this justifies his King's take on Ice, but I hate to say it does establish precedent. Ah! Well, Tim, I like to think that that moment when Ice mentions that about wearing the little black dress is one of two things. Either first, the crystal is already beginning to corrupt Ice, or second, maybe this is a situation where they're trying to demonstrate it's a woman who is in love with a man and trying to get the man to say it, and so she's looking for any means possible to get his attention. I don't know. Neither of those is really particularly great, but yeah, just trying to rationalize away why Ice would have said that and not tie it to the Tom King stuff. Then we heard from Doug Adamson from the Scottish Embassy. He says, well, that was a fun episode. Regarding the Injustice League story, he says, I wonder if that was a trial run for a spin-off comedy book starring the Injustice League. I think it would have been a perfect post-breakdowns book to have on the shelf as the JLI shifted back to the more dour and serious stories. Wow, that's a great idea, Doug. I doubt it was supposed to be like a backdoor pilot, but that would have been a lot of fun to have the Injustice League continue on with the wacky hijinks as the Justice League got more serious. That would have been great. Then he says, as for the main story, Cracked Ice, with just the gorgeous artwork, was it the length of 25 pages that meant that this wasn't in the main book? Was it in the schedule that was they couldn't shoehorn in before Breakdown started? Whatever the reason is, I don't get it, because what if we swapped this one out for the boxing issue, or indeed shifted Breakdowns back a month? Robertson's pencils certainly feel good enough to be here on the JLA book, even if it is his first work. You know, that makes a great point. That story was good enough to merit the Justice League America book, and they could have easily fit it in. Then we heard from Symbol Pending for our England embassy. They do the Symbol Pending Power Girl blog. Symbol Pending says, I enjoyed all the stories. Obviously, Power Girl's cats, comics the most. and as I mentioned before, I'm not a fan of Guy. And I think you hit on part of the reason. Because we so rarely see the Justice League in action, we rarely see that teamwork aspect of his character. So we just see more of his jerkiness, and that kind of hurts his character. And then he says, Ice is, as always, ever charming, even as a rampant 50-foot demon woman. And then finally, Symbol Pending says, oh, and for the really important question, as far as I can tell, Power Girl's cat isn't named Stinky until Power Girl in number 12 in 2009. That's crazy. And then Cymbal Pending. So sadly, that does appear to be the last appearance of the cat at the current moment. So, all right. So Cymbal Pending, that blows my mind that the cat wasn't named Stinky until 2009. Because, like, my memory is the name was Stinky all the way back to Justice League Europe. And I don't know whether it's something we just all as fans agreed upon or was assumed, or this is just a Mandela effect where we all misremember. That's just crazy. But thank you for fact-checking us. Then we heard from Liz Ann Oswald, who has her own YouTube channel. Liz says, finally, Guy and Ice express their love. Aw, so cute. And then Liz says, having General Glory freak out over the one drink was funny. Still was hoping that General Glory would get more from his mentorship of Guy Gardner. Yeah, Liz, that would have been nice to see more of that in these stories. I think they just kind of ran out of time. Then we're from Matthew T. Cody from Superman Radio Revisited podcast. He says, great episode. And again, Mike was a great guest. Again, Mike mentioned that the cracked ice story could be called Date with Density Part 3. Made me think of an idea for you when you want to repackage your podcast down the line after you wrap up everything you want to cover. Just like they could collect the dates of Density as a trade paperback, you could release them together as a podcast. The Armageddon 2001 JLA annual could also be included since we get Guy and Ice's marriage in that as well. Matthew, I love your idea of that after I'm done, I could repackage the podcast in collected editions. I'm not sure how I would really pull that off. We do sort of do that for our Who's Who podcast, believe it or not. We've done some like flashback episodes where we do pick and choose bits and pieces to string together. But I'm not sure I could do that here. I don't know. If something occurs to me, maybe I'll give it a try. They were from Mike Dynas from our Pacific Canadian Embassy. Mike says, another fantastic sideways step into the JLI universe. There's some great stories in this run that are fun to read and a nice change of pace from breakdowns. Well, I loved both Cracked Ice and The Sunny Caper. I think my favorite story was the cartoon strip Cattails. I remember laughing out loud as a kid when I read these, and I'm still laughing now as a supposedly mature adult. Then he says, I'm glad to hear about the coverage of the formerly known as the Justice League, and I can't believe it's not the Justice League because I'm a big fan of the Marvel family and love that Mary Marvel made the team. Then he asks about DC Retroactive Justice League 1990 as Giffen DeMatteis McGuire one-shot. So, all right, tell you what, since you folks are so dedicated and have listened to the feedback in the middle of a Meanwhile episode, I will let you know what my plans currently are. Now, this is always subject to change, but right now I am planning to do some, after we finish the breakdowns, to do some coverage, including JLA 80-page Giant number 1, which included a story with the mouse and Guy Gardner bumping his head. DC Retroactive JLA the 90s, which you just referenced. And then Justice League Unlimited number 43, which is a fun Blue Beetle and Booster Gold story written by Keith Giffen. We're also going to do an episode on the role-playing game module, Come On Down, which is another Justice League International role-playing module. I'm planning, hopefully, to do an episode about the Justice League International action figures. I'd like to do an episode on the Brave and the Bold cartoons, where they feature the Justice League, which is essentially this version of the Justice League. Then, of course, we've got formerly known as the Justice League. I can't believe it's not the Justice League. And then I've got a couple other surprises in mind that hopefully I can pull together. Ultimately, according to my current schedule, this has the podcast wrapping up around August 2024. So you still got, 15 episodes or so left. So thanks for asking, Mike. And then he goes on to say that this episode about Justice League Quarterly was a lot of fun, and Mike Harlow was a great guest. I mean, his name is Mike. He's got to be a great guest, right? With a name like that. Keep up the great work. Well, thank you, Mr. Dynas. I appreciate it. Then we heard from Brett Young from Imagine 8 Design. He says, not a doily to be found in the issue. No wonder things are breaking down. However, lots of checkerboard pattern floors and cattails, so there's that. Thank you, Brett. I appreciate it. Heard from Dave Steele from the Earth 2 podcast. He says, I really enjoyed this episode, reminding me how good the Justice League and Green Lantern quarterly books were back in the day. Thanks, Dave. Then heard from Crazy Joe Adventures, a new listener who has found us, and they're listening to our back catalog right now. Crazy Joe said, took me a while, but I just started listening from episode 1, so I'm way behind. I just listened to Meanwhile about annual number 1. So Crazy Joe, in, I guess, I don't know, 2 or 3 years, you'll hear this feedback and hear your name. So welcome to the embassy. They heard from Thanagarian Raz, who's also catching up, says, catching up on JLI podcast, and I really loved episode number 20 with Luke Dobb and the character spotlight on Hawkman. I highly recommend that section. Definitely helps with my research for the podcast I'm slowly getting around to. Awesome! I can't wait to hear that, Thanagarian Raz. And then we heard from John Wilson, our buddy who was on a couple months ago. He also does the Superman in Crisis podcast. He has been reading along with us. He's been reading a gazillion, I think that's actually the technical number, gazillion DC comics from the post-crisis era. And he has been reading along the Justice League books with us and listening to the podcast. And he got ahead of us and he says, here we are, the end of an era for Justice League. It was a pretty great ride. And thank you to JLI Podcast for being and continuing to be such a major part of this journey. Oh, well, thank you, John. Yeah, so John finished reading the entire Giffen and DeMatteis run, and I'm glad you liked it. And thank you so much for listening, John. We appreciate it. All right, folks, now this is the part of the show where I thank everyone who shared our show on their social media timeline, whether it's Facebook or Twitter. It is a long list of names. I know that. However, these folks show their their support and help promote the show. So it's important to me that we recognize these individuals. So here's everyone who helped promote the last episode by sharing on Facebook or retweeting on Twitter. Our thanks go out to
Third Head on the Go Go Godzilla podcast, Andre TFG, Between the Pages blog, Blue Beetle and Booster Gold Facebook group, Brian Schufo, Canadian Geek, Chris Franklin, Chris Lydon, Damian Drew A. Whiter, Dave's Comic Heroes blog, David Steele, Derek William Crabb, Dr. Jennifer Swartz Levine, Ed Moore, Frederico Hernandez, Geek to Me Radio, Gus Casals and his husband Ian Gutierrez, John Coos, John Wilson, Justice Trek, Justin Steiner, Keith G. Baker, Con L., Liz Ann Oswald, Marcus Varsano, Martin Kogan, Matthew Cody and his Superman Radio Revisited podcast, Max Romero, Michael Kramer, Michael Thomas, Mike Dynas, Mo Walker, OG Justice League, Pragmatic Golem, Prairie Justice, the Greg Saunders Vigilante Podcast, Relatively Geeky Podcast Network, Rob Kelly and his accounts for Digest Cast, Mountain Comics, Super Friends for All Mankind Podcast, and Treasury Cast, Rolled Spine Podcast, Sean Ross and the Secret Wars and Beyond Podcast, Siskoid, Slangword Scott, Steven or Else, Symbol Pending, The Bat Pod, The Earth 2 Podcast, The Voice of Paul, Tim Price and his Outcasters and Batman and the Outsiders podcast, Tommy Sandberg, Trent Lewis, Victor Perfecto, Warlock Thanos podcast, Willie Yarbrough, and Zek Cap Boots. My thanks to all of you for your support of the JLI podcast, folks. Your feedback is such a critical part of the show, and this community of JLI fans we're building together is absolutely fantastic. Now, if I've forgotten or missed anyone, I am terribly sorry. It is probably the fault of Mike Harlow. So let me know, and I'll be sure to include you on the next episode. Please keep those cards and letters coming, everyone. Our website is fireandwaterpodcast.com/JLI. Leave your comments on the show post. That is where most of the activity is. Then over on Facebook, you can find us as the JLI podcast. On Twitter, JLI podcast, and on email is jlipodcast@gmail.com. My thanks again to Mike Harlow for appearing on the most recent episode of the show, and thank you listeners for such a great collection of feedback. You guys seriously are the absolute best, and I mean that. I truly, truly do. These segments are one of the pure joys of doing the show. Now, we're going to take a quick podcast promo break, and when we come back, we'll see if John Coos's arm survived its experience with Magog.
Hey everybody, Quentin Robinson here. I recently attempted to sneak into the Longbox Crusade headquarters basement to watch some of the Albrecht Brothers action movies while the crew was out at the Saturday matinee theater. Too bad I had a little mishap and got stuck down here with no movies to boot. However, there are pieces of Pat's old podcasting equipment and excellent Wi-Fi service, so I decided to pass the time watching online fan films and talking about them. What, you don't know what a fan film is? Well, there are these non-theatrical movies that people post online of already established characters and settings. Hey now. Just wait and see. Save all judgment for what happens when you listen to Fan Film Fridays, a new podcast found on the Longbox Crusade podcast feed.
Imagine a podcast that celebrates the things we love. Why spend time being so angry and cynical about our fandoms? Join me, the Irredeemable Shag, for a show where we're just trying to be happy. The Once Upon a Geek podcast. Our discussions focus on a variety of geeky subjects that we're passionate about. While the topics will be ever-changing, our focus will be on science fiction, comic books, what it means to be a geek in this world, and other nostalgia-fueled ideas. Life is short. Focus on the positive. Find your joy. The Once Upon a Geek podcast, part of the Fire and Water Podcast Network. Okay, folks, we're back from break, and I've got John here with me. John, thank you so much for appearing on this episode of the show. Oh, such a blast to have you back, pal. I really enjoyed it. And you know what? We struggle with some of the things of the issue, but we had a good time talking about it, and we found some things to love in it. So why don't you tell the listeners where they can find you on the internets?
Well, as long as Twitter lasts, you can find me at John Coos. I was an early adopter, and more recently, I've rediscovered DC Universe Online. And so if you really want to go, like, find me on there, you can do so. But, you know, send me a DM on Twitter and I'll tell you my character's names. But I was an early adopter on that game back when it first came out. I think it was 11-ish, 2011. Okay. First 6 years, I played, like, religiously. I was such an early adopter on that, just like I was on Twitter with, you know, getting my real name, not just, like, John Coos, like, you know, 45 or something. Like, and I had a character named Bat Lady.
Oh, wow.
And not Bat Lady with, like, with an I at the end or anything like that. And then I got busy. I got, life took over. I quit. And then I got back into it recently. And I was shocked it was still there. but it still has, you know, a massive following. And they're still putting out new segments. The latest ones centered around Static Shock.
Oh, nice.
The previous one was centered around Black Adam, which I think had to do with the movie maybe. But it's such a well-done game. And look me up on Twitter. And if you're a geek like me and playing DCU, maybe we can be friends in the DCU.
I do know there are several people that listen to the show that do play the game, so you may get reached out to by some folks.
That'd be fun. So, and I also really appreciate you having me back so soon, and I'm just curious, you know, like, you know, I did a crammed all your episodes like a year ago or so. I don't remember somebody appearing so close to their original appearance as me. Am I wrong about that?
See, we don't talk about this stuff on the air because then you get me in trouble. So yes, first of all, there have not been that many repeat guests because there's so many people who want to talk about this series. So there have been a lot of repeat guests. And yes, when they do repeat, there tends to be a lot of time in between. The reason why you got back on so quickly, besides the large sum of money you paid me, is that this issue kind of came out of the blue. I wasn't expecting this in the schedule. So unfortunately, now that we're talking about this on the air, what's going to happen is all the past guests, all like 100 past guests are going to be writing me going, so when am I coming back? And the problem is the show's playing out through the end. Well, thanks a lot, John. You're causing me headaches.
Well, whatever. That's their problem. I'll see you in 6 months. We'll do another one.
Oh, my God. No, we won't.
All right. It was great fun, man.
I will say, anyone that was on the show before that wants to be on another show, let me know because I can do Once Upon a Geek. We can talk about anything with anybody. So that's fully open. So there we go.
Sign me up, man.
Hey, we'll do it. And I appreciate you being here, John. This was an absolute blast. And folks, that is going to do it. Now, come back next episode when we jump back into our coverage of Breakdowns. And we shouldn't have any more interruptions until we finish that massive storyline. Next episode, we'll cover Justice League America number 54 and Justice League Europe number 30, which is Breakdowns part 3 and part 4. And we'll have two more guest hosts to help me cover the issues. Who will they be? Come on, folks. None of this is a shocker. We've been doing this for a long time. You don't know. I'm not going to tell you. You're going to have to wait and find out next episode. Thanks for listening, everyone. Until next time, I'm Shag.
And I'm John.
And you've been listening to the JLI podcast.
Want to make something of it?